Relevant content for our members, by our members. This is TMC Connect.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome to the last week in mortgage today. We're going to let people roll in here for a minute or so, and then we will get going. Sarah, have you seen it turn fall in your area yet?
It's like, yeah, it is. It's brown here mostly, though. We're in the plains. Everyone's just harvesting. So, but yeah, if you go on the western side of our state in the Black Hills, it's beautiful. I was just out there last week for a conference and yeah, it is really beautiful.
Nice.
The aspen trees are nice and yellow.
Yeah. We're definitely in the Twin Cities. It turned all of a sudden. We had one week that it was in the 70s and 80s and the next week the high was the 50s. So I'm hoping that by leaving there that I'm going to go back and back in the 60s at least.
Yep. Yeah, we've had that roller coaster too. And then we got 3 inches of rain last week, which we really, really needed. So that was good.
We had that blow through on one day there. It was like, oh my gosh, is winter going to come this soon? It was 45 degrees outside and it rained the entire day.
Yeah. They got snow out in the Black Hills, but not as much as they were supposed to. The temperature stayed higher than they originally thought. But
nice.
Well,
nice.
Yeah, that was good. I would rather drive back in sheets of rain than a blizzard. Too early for that.
Way too early for that. All right, I think we'll get going here. We have a bunch of people that have joined us. We've got a few more that are hopping on, but this is the last week in mortgage today. I'm Faith Howard Mooney from the Mortgage Collaborative. I have with me today Sarah Senska, who is the Chief Mortgage Officer at Dakota Land Federal Credit Union. Yay. Thanks for joining me.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And so you noticed like an unusual background that I have today. So I am at MBA Annual in Philadelphia. It's been great being here, seeing tons of people here. Why don't we start out though first by Sarah, why don't you share with everybody kind of like who Dakota Land is. Let's start out there first, and then we'll roll into other things so that they have kind of what your perspective is.
Yeah, so Dakota Land Federal Credit Union is located in Eastern Central South Dakota, mostly sprinkled kind of all over. We only do mortgages in South Dakota, but we've kind of found that to be our niche. And we serve the rural area of Eastern South Dakota very, very well. And we also service our own secondary market loans. We have a portfolio of about 4,200 mortgage loans that we service. So, yeah, we're pretty proud of what we do for the area that we cover. So,
yes, you should be, as you should be. So I thought I would give just a little bit of a debrief of some of the things that we've heard. And I know you like to ask questions, so maybe you'll have a few in there. So I've been able to attend a few sessions in between my meetings. And one of the ones I went to, knowing that we were going to do this broadcast today, was kind of the initial market forecast of, you know, what people expected to find. Oh, we've got
another South Dakotan. Woohoo!
How about that? Welcome, Erin. And one of the things that they talked about that I was kind of curious about is, of course, the timing of things of what MBA kind of was projecting and kind of in the like volume levels that they were projecting. And of course, there were all kinds of stipulations around it that, you know, if a war would happen, things could change completely differently, those types of things. But one of the takeaways from that session was that from where we're at right now, over the next 2 years, the expectation is I think next year, a 19% growth. The year after that, a 16% growth. So 2 years from now, 35% above where we are right now, which I thought was shocking in the percentage, not necessarily in the time frame, but kind of in the percentages that they were talking about. And I know you're kind of in an unusual situation and where you're at, that it doesn't necessarily, you don't necessarily look like everyone else. But from an overall industry, do you have any, like, does that surprise you at all?
Well, I mean, I'll believe it when I see it, because I barely believe any forecast I hear anymore. but yeah, I mean, rates, assuming rates go down a little bit, I mean, they're definitely not where they need to be. I mean, it's unsustainable. So, I mean, at some point, they're going to have to start going down. And I just listened to something this morning, though. I mean, they're projecting the Treasury to have to be to still go up yet. Which isn't good for us, but I mean, the world, we need the world to buy our bonds, and there's, you know, whatever. So, I think it's going to get a little worse before it gets better, but it has to get better. And I think when it does get better, we're going to see movement. So
from a rate standpoint, they were talking in those 2 years down between 5.5% and 5% is kind of the numbers that they were throwing out about, and commentary was made that things could go up a little bit more before they go down. So I think you're, you know, kind of a little bit spot on related to that. One of the other things that I thought was very interesting is, and we hear about it and talk with other people about it all the time, it's like where the cost of doing business is right now related to the number of, you know, mortgages that are out there for people to do and profitability of an organization. And they did a trending, I guess I would say, based on MBA lender members, 350 MBA lender members, and found that 25% of the marketplace is in a profitable place.
Ooh, that's not very good.
Yeah. Not surprised, though, based on some of the things that we were hearing, and kind of they were prefacing that conversation based on saying that, you know, there are places where people still will need to find efficiency and or cut people and those types of things. But there are lenders out there who are profitable. 350 lenders obviously isn't inclusive of the whole mortgage environment. So it's like my mind went to, I would love to see the list of who those people were, you know, what size they were and all of those things to kind of get a better gauge of that. But yeah, interesting times here. And then the last thing I'll just mention before we move on is the one thing that was like so really kind of cool to see, because I've always said that like our conferences that we have at TMC are so different than like an MBA conference. And they still are from a session perspective. But the one thing that has been really consistent here and just so cool is people have figured out that you're stronger together. And there were a lot of conversations happening between people that, I mean, if they were happening before, I didn't notice. And I'm a pretty perceptive person. So I feel like I would have noticed that people are figuring out that like some of your best assets right now may be people that are in even competing mortgage companies with you, if you can like partner together and figure out different solutions together and stuff. So that was really refreshing to see that it kind of appears that the industry, you know, in times of change, they've kind of figured out that, okay, it's not all always about competing with each other. It's about doing things that make our industry survive and that are servicing people and, you know, finding the solutions for the people that are going to be the next round of people that are buying homes. So that was extremely refreshing, of course, to see.
Yeah. Did you hear anything? I was curious. I just read this morning that the FHFA was out there, right? I think wasn't Sam. She was out there. Did you hear anything? I read this morning that Tim Scott from the Senate Banking Committee sent a letter to the FHFA asking them to abandon the bi-merge thing and stick with tri-merges. Did you hear anything out there about that?
I have not heard. I did see that, but I have not heard anything about that. For people, I know that we had started talking about that in network quite a while ago, and we actually had a group of people that were getting together to kind of like work on workflow together, so that, you know, they thought more minds together, we can figure this out together on how we're going to do this and what the impacts are to our multiple business lines in our business. And we kind of abandoned that because it's been delayed. You know, the projection, I think, was 2026 rollout. So it kind of doesn't surprise me, because I think about when they're looking at that kind of a transition and it's that far away, they're investigating some other pieces of that. And they had an open period of asking for feedback during that time frame. So I guess in some ways that doesn't surprise me, but I haven't heard anything. But I will do some checking around. I'm still here for one more day.
Yeah. Yeah. My what I read is he was just like, I mean, he just doesn't agree that there was a few of them, right? They think there will be incomplete data, but I think their intent was to save money mostly, right? And only pulling the buy merge. And I don't know, but
yeah, I think intent long term was that. But I also know that there was a time period of about a year and a half in there, and how they had the workflow set up that for some people you're going to have to always pull all three. And you're going to have to report three some places and two some other places. So it makes a very, very complicated workflow.
Right.
And then you get into multiple business channels, and it's like a different thing and different business channels. And so, I think that's some of what is being talked about is how do we do this? How do we make this happen? For someone, there was a question out here. Someone posted MBA mortgage finance forecast is for the 30-year fixed rate to be 7.2 at the end of the fourth quarter. We're way above that already. Projection, you know, they were still talking about a potential. So we've got two more opportunities for things to get cut or them raise or, you know, keep things flat. And they actually were talking about, I believe, though, it was first quarter 2024 before they projected. I'd have to go back through my notes before they projected an actual cut, but anticipating cuts in 2024, you know, maybe not the type of cuts that people want. But I don't think that there was conversation under 7 before the first of the year. So I don't know. I mean, what do other people on the call think? Do you think 7.2% is something that's feasible before the end of the year when we're closer to 8? Right now, I would love to hear how people are feeling about that, but they may have extended that out a little bit beyond the end of the fourth quarter as well. One of the things that I thought that we would talk about moving off of MBA annual that we would talk about today is something that I landed across this week, and it was a survey. It was done by LendingTree, found that nearly 2 of 5 homeowners, 39%, received down payment assistance aid. What I thought was interesting about it is that they claim that the bulk of that is coming from parents.
That surprised me too. Like 78%. Wow.
There are all kinds of resources out there for down payment assistance, right? Maybe fewer as you get towards the end of the year as some of those funds, you know, get utilized. But it's like, as a parent, I mean, I'm fortunate in that I have kids that are in their second house at 31. But I just thought that was surprising. So, is the motivation to get somebody out of the basement? Maybe
that could be
what was playing through my head. It's like, oh, they want their house back. But I thought that was very, very interesting. 78% of Gen Z homeowners, received financial backing for down payments. Millennials, 54%, Gen Xers, 33%. So it's like a large percentage too. It's not a small one. The other thing that kind of came to mind was the fact that is some of this student loan debt that's kind of impacting this need to supplement. And Jamie, they did not say. Let me see. They did not say the percentage. of parents. They did not specifically point that out in the article that I read.
Yeah, just as primarily from parents.
Yeah. I would love to, there's obviously a lot of down payment assistance programs out there. Last night I was at dinner with somebody who is in the Philadelphia market where we're at, and Covergence, which is MBA's program only in very specific markets, it moved into Philadelphia, and she's part of that planning strategy for, you know, trying to get more homeowners into homes. And she happened to mention that in Philadelphia, there are 13 down payment assistance programs that even she, as a very educated person in this market, did not know there were 13 here in Philly that she was just talking about. So I know a lot of people are working with DPAs right now. I would love, you know, to kind of hear your feedback, whether you've got, you know, borrowers that are tapping into those sources and kind of what type of availability you found out there in the marketplace for helping people with down payment assistance.
Well, again, because in the area we serve, I mean, there are ones that are very specific to South Dakota. So, I mean, we use some of those, but I think there are a lot out there. If you research, I know when I went to a housing thing, there were more available than I realized. And FHLB offers some. They go so fast. I mean, I think, and we do a lot of rural development here, but I will say it's a trend that has really, this last year, people have less and less savings. It doesn't matter your age. And debt ratios are so much higher. I mean, people are pinched. So the fact that they need more help, if they do have to make a down payment, it's the fact that they need more help is not surprising me. So, yeah, I think that's one thing lenders can do to probably maybe help bump up their loans is do some research and see what's available out there. And then, you know, a lot of PMI companies are offering programs right now if you want to work with them, where you can do a higher loan to value. So I think there's resources if you spend your time looking for them.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that I thought was really interesting that I think a lot of times the homeowner doesn't know what those resources are. As a matter of fact, the same article brought up the fact that a lot of people, now probably not anyone on this call, right? Because we're all in mortgage. And I know I do because I've been in for so long, but sometimes lose sight of the fact that the things that we know and we think are everyday knowledge aren't necessarily knowledge within the general public. And so there's still this myth out there with a lot of people. And I know I heard one of my neighbors talking about it not that long ago, that you have to have 20% down in order to purchase a house, which for me, it just seems like so archaic, right?
I know. I agree. I don't know how that myth can still be out there, but
yeah.
The question is, how do you reach those people that don't know? I don't know. The best thing the marketing people say is like TikTok and YouTube. They're like, that's all anyone watches anymore. So I think
maybe that's why I'm out of touch. I use YouTube all the time, but yeah, I thought that was very interesting. It's like, so what do we, you know, it's like, that's a great point. It's like, maybe the sources of that information have dramatically changed. I mean, maybe we need to be targeting other places to educate people. So one of the things that we were actually talking about at dinner last night, because, you know, us mortgage people, we never get away from work. We still, even when we're at dinner, we're talking about work. We were talking about, you know, like, when do you start educating people? And I mean, is it middle schoolers? Is it high schoolers? You know, is it kids that are in college, or is that too late, you know, for them to understand, you know, to be financially literate? Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if you've seen anything out there in your communities that are kind of like targeting the people. I mean, let's face it, not everybody changes homes every 5 years or goes through the mortgage process multiple times like some of the rest of us do because we're so comfortable with it. So how do you get the word out to your community?
Yeah, no, we've been having those discussions, and that's the best thing we've been recommended. It's just, we have to get out on social media. Like, 1 to 2 minute clips. And literally, that's what we've been told. Like, you have to try YouTube and TikTok because it used to be the younger generation, you know, I think, but it's not that anymore. I mean, I just think that's what, I mean, and everybody is that's what they're doing. So,
yeah. YouTube is my go-to. I actually fixed a vacuum from a video of a 12-year-old kid not too long ago. And it's like, I'm convinced that that's where you go to do any home repair at this point. So I guess I can kind of understand that. Also conversation here, because I mean, last night I got to see Maroon 5. It was a fabulous concert. It was
so jealous.
No, it was absolutely wonderful. In this market, Freedom is in this market. They've also been in the news lately, passing No Judgment, because I'm a firm believer that you never know the full side of the story, but they had a $1.75 million penalty not too long ago for kickbacks for loan referrals. And then this week in the news was kind of like round two, where they're citing breach of federal requirements and inaccurate data submissions related to HMDA, which led me to think about, you know, the CFPB and the CFPB's role in our market and what we think that means. Not that everybody, and definitely most people, are not of the size of Freedom in the mortgage collaborative. That's not our focus. Our focus is on, you know, smaller people that want to work together and gain efficiency from being together. But it made me think about, you know, are we moving into more of a cycle of enforcement? So I'd love to hear from anybody who's on the call today. It's like, how do you feel about that? What are you seeing from like any audits, you know, that you may have had fall across your plate? What do you think is going to happen with the industry related to, usually when you see one, you see another one follow after? So anybody out there, and Sarah, you too, do you think that auditing is going to begin to be tougher with lesser volume in the industry, CFPB's involvement in things? What do you kind of think that looks
like? You know, I wondered, you know, I actually sent that article when that came out about Freedom to a lot of our realtor partners, because, you know, the real estate company ended up getting fined too. I mean, not near the scope of Freedom. But, you know, I wonder if the CFPB is just thinking that because times are tough, they're doing different things, trying to get business. You know, that's kind of what I wondered when I read that. But, you know, the compliance company we use has been talking to us about specifically referrals and being really careful about that and the marketing and making sure that you're, I mean, they said it's been on CFPB's radar for the last year or two. There's just only been a couple in the news. But so I think we just have to be careful that we're, you know, doing things equally or not just focusing on one company. So,
yeah, I think that, you know, some of it is headlines. Getting a headline is almost like, is that meant to be like a warning? I mean, as I said, we don't know the whole story behind that or what really happened. We only know what's out in the press. And we also know what's in the press sometimes is maybe a little bit. There's a middle ground there somewhere where there's like the real story. I do think that, you know, based on what we're hearing from some people within network, that, you know, it is time that you have everything buttoned up for sure. Between looking at LO comp and, you know, some of those other issues, you know, there may be, you know, just like more scrutiny, maybe more time, more scrutiny. I don't know. Yeah. And so there is a question out there for you, Sarah, that asks if you mind telling what compliance company that you use.
Bankers Compliance Consulting out of Nebraska. I love, love, love them. They do a lot of auditing of banks, and they're just real, real down to earth. I mean, they put out manuals, they quote the regs, but they're like, okay, like we know how it works in the real world. Let me explain this to you in terms you can understand. Yeah, they're amazing.
And we will try to get that out to you, Sean. I see that it's you asking the question. So we'll get some contact information in case you want to, if you want to kind of like check that one out and work in that. Department of Justice also in the news. So that is another thing that kind of led me to, I think we're going to be actually looking at things. That one was related to declining loans due to solely immigration status.
Yes. Which
I mean, so I live in the land of 10,000 lakes, not too far from you.
Yeah.
Where we have a very, people always think Midwestern, that we don't have a large mix of people, but we have the largest Islamic population in the United States that live in the state of Minnesota. And I guess I thought that that was the past. So am I like naive in thinking that that's still out there?
Well, I don't think it's discrimination so much. I actually had to read that because I do know a few places that still have it in, so in portfolio lending, that you need to be a permanent resident. So it's not like discrimination. It's just, clearly immigration status. So I found that really interesting that they threw that out. I had to read that after you sent that to me. And it said, you can't just, if they have, basically it said, like, if they have good credit, ties to the U.S. and ability to repay, you better not be denying them.
Yeah. I just thought that was very, very, very interesting.
Up until, I want to say 2 years ago, at the most, rural development required them to be permanent residents. They just changed it. Mm-hmm.
Wow. I had,
we have a very diverse population here, where we're at too. And it was an issue. Yeah. So secondary market was, you know, Fannie and then we're way far ahead on that, but
very, very interesting. It's always good for me to hear, cause I'm like, obviously not in the day to day. So I love hearing that, and gaining knowledge from you guys that are at, street level. So believe it or not, we're like within 5 minutes of the end today. But I wanted to talk about one last thing that I just thought, you know, it's like we have to find some joy in thinking about things in the world right now. So a topic that got my attention immediately when I read it today was that home buying is now considered more stressful than dating.
I knew you were going to say that one. I know. I'm like, we have work to do. The percentage went up a little bit. It's like not quite as stressful as divorcing. I was like, man, if they're comparing home buying to divorcing, we have big, big problems. Like, we have work to do.
I was giggling about it as I read it. So the stats are out there for those of you that haven't seen the article. 59% of recent home buyers found purchasing a home to be more anxiety inducing than dating. it's like buyers are increasingly ghosting sellers as housing costs climb, which is something that you see on the dating scene, I think, quite a bit. The only things greater than the stress of buying a home are buying a car. The car has gotten significantly easier in my opinion.
I don't know.
Buying a car, the stress of potty training a child, and like 5,000 people participated in this survey. So it wasn't just a teeny tiny survey. You know, and then one of the things that they also did mention, which I know that a lot of people are still working remotely or a hybrid process, but there is a trend also in the industry of people trying to get people back into the office. And notably, 10% of the home sellers that were in this pool were relocating due to return of office policies. So I wonder if that's more of the stress of their home buying purchase and that added stress into that 10% of the population, because they were also being made to do something that they obviously at some point in time had made a decision not to do, and they were having to revert back to living you know, where their job was. And so I kind of equated that to some of that. But I just thought that that was hysterical, that home buying is like, education is going to be important for us in the next year. People think that home buying is more stressful than your personal life changes.
I agree. We have work to do.
I think that's like a wonderful place. We're at the bottom of the hour. Wonderful place to stop. Thank you so much. It's always just delightful for me to be able to have a few minutes to talk with you.
Yes, it was
fun. Appreciate you being within our network and your willingness to do this with us as well. We will be back next week at the same time. And if you haven't participated in this call and you're listening on YouTube, which go out and subscribe to our YouTube channel, because Sarah said that YouTube is one of the most important places to be. If you haven't done that, please do that. And we will see you next week. And Emma Peterson, I am going to stop by and see you at booth 1008. So we'll see you a little bit later today. Thank you, Sarah. Bye. Appreciate you. Bye.
For more information about how you can get involved with TMC Connect and witness the power of the network firsthand, please visit us at mortgagecollaborative.com.